Delhi was to play host to the Commonwealth Games, also known as CWG, of 2010. According to company filings, several investors of a sports marketing company that was scooping up lucrative contracts in connection with the CWG were residents of this village of Kerala. I was looking for those lucky men. The 19th CWG, with over 6,000 athletes from 71 countries competing in 21 disciplines and 272 events, was the biggest sporting meet India had ever hosted. The central government, led by Prime Minister Dr. Manmohan Singh, wanted to make it a grand coming-of-age show, with a total spend of almost 50,000 crore rupees by various estimates. Multi-lane elevated roads were built over congested parts of Delhi, new metro lines snaked in fresh directions under and over the city, dedicated apartments for athletes rose up on the Yamuna riverbed, shabby stadiums received impressive facelifts, and as the games inched closer, the ugly parts were covered with view blockers and thousands of beggars were carted away to government-run hostels outside the city. A sanitized India welcomed foreign visitors. Jubilee Sports Technology Private Limited, many of whose promoters claimed to live in Kerala, played a critical role in getting the city ready for the games. I began to get curious about the company when I found out that it was floated by a man arrested in the past by government investigators for accepting a bribe on behalf of his late father, then a senior government official. After hours of searching with active assistance from local residents, I still couldn't find the men behind Jubilee Sports and returned to file a new story about the missing men. This was, of course, far from exceptional. Over the years, almost every major financial transaction in India has been made by fictitious shareholders and proxy directors through shady deals, cash movements to tax havens, and, often enough, outright criminal conspiracy. In fact, this modus operandi is not just limited to the financial world. If you are able to summon the forensic skills necessary to detect the real powers behind fictitious shareholders and proxy voters, it will get you an intimate, revolting view of India's underbelly, one that will swallow the sanitized, democratic India of impressive achievements and global ambitions. This book grew out of my anguish at the staggering size and scale of that underbelly, the dilapidated state of Indian institutions, and the deep immorality at the heart of our democracy. Collectively, these factors drive the majority of India's citizens to a permanent state of helplessness, and many of them to suicide. The monotony of reading about those deaths and the insensitivity of India's elite set me out on the path to researching this book sometime in 2007. The rules of the game in modern India are very simple. Even if the structure it creates is a horribly tangled maze, in this country, it is okay to do practically anything, use fake promoters, accept bribes, commission murders, intimidate media, manipulate courts, and grab power. The one big rule? Don't get caught. This book is about the reality every citizen and all visitors experience in myriad ways. For years, I struggled to find a structure to write about that India. And even this narrative remains an incomplete rendition of a complex web. Every individual in that web has a stake in the perpetuation of the system, and each one of them contributes to denying poor access to instruments of democracy. The courts in the world's largest democracy are crowded and expensive, the police corrupt and cruel, the powerful television and English language media far too urban, and the political class busy plotting to grab power. When you attempt to unmask the appalling double games of the people that run India and drive its economy, and put together evidence of their duplicity, they will deploy ingenious methods to silence you. It is not always crude intimidation.